Happy New Year. Welcome to Geek and Biscuits, our first episode of 2021. How are you doing, mate? You alright?
Yeah, crappy New Year to you too.
Back in lockdown.
Oh yeah, absolutely, absolutely. I'm good there, mate. Had a nice rest. How about you?
Yeah, not bad. I really had a nice Christmas. Pretty hectic with all the kiddiewinks, but yeah, you had your first Christmas with your little one. Exciting times, mate.
Oh yeah, definitely. I love wrapping presents that we then have to open.
Damn her tiny little baby fingers.
Exactly. She just brought a roll of wrapping paper.
Yeah. Where's your strength, you little witch? I love kids. So right, we're starting off this year with a new film, which is unusual for us. Because we lack nostalgia.
We do.
But yeah, a new film, which was released, I think, over here, Boxing Day. And it is Wonder Woman 84, or WW 84, World War 84.
I was a bit worried, actually, because I've not watched the previous 83, but I thought I'd give it a go.
So, obviously, following on Patty Jenkins directing Gal Gadot in the sequel to it was quite successful, the first Wonder Woman.
Yep.
Did you get around to seeing the first one?
I did, and I don't remember much about it, actually. I think it's probably a little bit as not bland, but probably as memorable as Chris Pine's face. but I remember it not sucking. So yes. For DC.
Yeah, this is the thing. I think on the list of on the tier of DC successful films for the Snyderverse.
Yeah,
I was starting with Man of Steel. And as we said this the other day, I mean, we're 11 years into it or something like that. I don't know, probably a bit less. I'm not sure. Can't remember when Man of Steel came out, but we're a fair few years into it. And it seems really strange that Man of Steel, to me, is still the best film they've produced within that universe. And the exception, Shazam was pretty good because it was different. They went down the comedy route.
Yeah, absolutely.
Wonder Woman, yeah, it was good, but again, it was, and this is a point I'll pick on in a bit. The thing what a lot of people seem to didn't like about the first one was the overuse of CGI in the ending. Yeah. And Patty Jenkins very recently said that was Warner's decision and not hers to have a big flashy CGI ending. Then you get to Wonder Woman 84. And it's a big flashy CGI ending.
Yeah. Well, one of those first points I'd like to pick up on is you may not have wanted that in the first one, but instead we got two openings and Warner Brothers wanted them to drop one because it's like you have the like Special Olympics kind of gladiatorial style opening, which is full of special effects. And then you get the mall where it's like Spider-Man 3 style special effects.
Oh my God, yeah. I mean, before we get into the crux of everything, obviously, how did you feel when the trailer came out? What was your... You've seen the trailer. We watch trailers all the time.
Absolutely. I was a little bit worried because the 80s thing's being beaten to death and Stranger Things has kind of nailed the 80s vibe. And I was a little bit worried that we'd either go way too into the 80s trying to compete with Stranger Things and things like that. Mm. Or I was a little bit concerned that we wouldn't really have... It'd be kind of gimmicky. It wouldn't touch on it enough. And I feel it drops into the second part of that anyway, which we'll touch on later. Mm. So I wasn't holding out a lot of hope myself. Obviously, I'm a fan of Pedro Pascal. Although, again, less probably said about... 1980s, so his portrayal of J.R. Ewing, Donald Trump, slash every successful or unsuccessful businessman from the 80s in America is it's not original, but he gives it his best shot, bless him.
Yeah,
he stood out.
Oh yeah. I would say that if you're going to take anything away from Wonder Woman 84, is that Pedro Pascal is the standout thing in it.
I'd say so.
He does give it his all, and when you first sort of see him all done up with that sort of slightly dark blonde haircut, which so not used to seeing him sort of so almost sounding dodgy, so Caucasian. You know, just seem really weird. So you presented with someone who you know how he looks normally. So it's that falseness.
Well, did you? This is a question that's just come to my mind, and you've probably got as good a chance as knowing as anybody, because I'm not really sure. There's a clip of him, isn't there, where he's first starting out his little empire, where he's got a tiny little office. Did they de-age him there? Because I noticed that he's obviously slimmer-faced then, slightly. But also, I didn't realise till the other day that one of the... You and your partner watching Buffy the Vampire Slayer at the minute, and I noticed he was in one of the episodes of Buffy. And that clip of him there, I was like, oh my shit. That, like, I was like, I forgot Pedro Pascal was in that. Yeah, so I just wondered, actually, talking about his appearance, did they do a tiny, because they wouldn't need much to de-age him, would they?
No, I think they did a smoothing. Less of a reconstruction. I think they did a digital... It's like an X-Men 3.
Yeah.
Let's make people younger by removing all the wrinkles and hope that people think that's natural.
Yeah, exactly.
Also take away any kind of characteristics of the face whatsoever.
Yeah.
You see, the thing, I'll just go into it, because I saw the trailer and I was like, well, it looks a bit fun, 80s. Yeah, we're both big fans of the 80s. The Patrick sold it as, I've made it like an 80s film. Again, something to be happy about. The trailer looked nuts, looked really colourful. Thought they're definitely moving away from that original sort of Snyderverse thing with trying to stand on its own 2 feet, you know, as a separate entity. And then you sort of see she's riding lightning with a lasso, and you sort of think, you know, you've got to suspend a small amount of disbelief in these films. But you see that and thinking, right, okay. And then you see the little clip of, you know, Steve's back, and you think, right, so how are they going to explain that? And then it's the invisible plane sort of in the trailer where they look at the fireworks, you think, right, so they're bringing the invisible plane into it, which is, you know, part and parcel of the whole Wonder Woman package from the comic books. So I was like, yeah, do you know what, I'll give it a go. The thing that got me stoked the most recent was that Patty Jenkins did the release trailer for, the teaser trailer for Rogue Squadron.
Yeah, she did.
And I was thinking, yeah, what were great, you know, Patty Jenkins. So it must be in safe hands if Disney are trusting her with Rogue Squadron.
Exactly.
Makes you wonder if anyone had seen, that Disney had seen a rough cut of Wonder Woman 84 at all. But do you know what, to say, I was bored.
Did you fall asleep 3 times like I did?
I did not, though. No, I didn't. Oh. No, bless you. No, I think the problem I had with it was it didn't go anywhere for such a long time. We'd had a lot of setup from Wonder Woman, from the original one. And, you know, there was such a large amount of background info on Diana. You know, we got all this stuff to do with a past. We got so much set up in the first one, and such a decent emotional payoff in the first one with where Steve ended up. That, much like most sequels, you shouldn't need any more setup for a character, for the main character. Use the second film to set up your villains. Batman Returns, for example. Batman's barely in it, and it works so much better for it because you're concentrating on building your villains up.
Absolutely.
You know, Superman 2, again, Superman, he's had his setup. They do the villain. They focus on the villains, you know, and that's what should have happened here. Whereas you get an okay-ish opening fight scene in the shopping centre, which I think is supposed to be played for comedic relief, but it really misses all its marks. It feels off.
The kid that she saves and says hold on and spins her into the soft toy. Oh my god! I wish the soft toy was made out of stone.
But then it's like, for me, it's just like, so you get that bit, and then for the next hour and a half, fuck all happens. Yes, you introduce Christine Weig's character, Barbara, and you know, Pedro Pascal gets introduced, and then Steve returns for, you know,
which is bizarre.
Yeah, it's the fact that, I mean, spoiler, we'll go in deep into spoilers, but Steve returns, he's basically soul inhabits another bloke. And Gal Gadot, you know, Diana sees him as Steve, yeah, there's no sort of quarrel about his life. You know, Steve just wakes up, because I woke up in this apartment, everything's, you know, and Diana's straight in bed with him, not worrying whether his family, or this random guy's family, or, you know, his job are worried about him, his family, his friends are worried about him. You just accept that. Yeah, he's possessed someone. It's okay, because it's Steve.
I'll put you in the face of danger as well, innocent.
Yeah, yeah.
What really bothers me about that is, and we will obviously come straight into it more, like you said, when we get into the crux and keep going, but is the fact that you clearly get some rules that are just, the logic is everywhere. Like, why was he just not resurrected or returned? Or like, why are some people allowed to make wishes, which again, it will make sense if you've seen it, and everything's perfect, although it's the monkey's paw you take away from, give and you take away, you know, so you lose whatever's important, sometimes just whatever it can get, like, I'll take your guards, okay, because your oil's gone. But bizarre, but why? It's not like we're talking about like something that's supposed to be debatable or questionable or something. Yeah. It's a comic book movie. Why is he just not there? Why did they have to complicate it? Like,
do you know what they should have done? Was that, for me, because basically, you know, Pedro Pascal's character, Maxwell Lord, he's after some artifact that happens to be belong to the museum that, you know, Wonder Woman's working at with Christian Wiig's character. It's got magical properties, basically grants wishes. Pedro Pascal decides to wish that he was this artifact so he can continue the grant.
Why wishes. Is he not the stone?
Yeah, exactly. And the only thing it takes away from him is time with his son, essentially, isn't it? That's the only thing he loses. But everyone else, you know, like you said quite rightly, it's the monkey's paw. So whatever they wish for, they have to take something. He has to take something away from them. Now, the thing is, what I would have done is pinched Steve out from his moment of just before the moment of his death, taking him out of that time period, not so it doesn't mess with, you know, it seems bringing this soul back or whatever. So it is physically, like you said, it's physically Steve. It takes him out from his moment of death. Then they could have got on with that god awful fish out of water element where he's changing to Ryan all the different clothes that we've seen in every fucking 1880s films ever, or fish out of water films. Or it,
but
just,
is there any comedy in
no.
Exactly. It's just terrible.
So much. It just, it's done for, it's not. It's, I think they go, oh yeah, play it for laughs. Do you know what it was missing? The only thing
the laughs.
Well, the laughs, yeah. It was missing was an 80s song.
That is bizarre to me. Absolutely bizarre. It's absolutely the first bit you think, you see Operation Wolf in the arcade, you think, okay, we're going to have some 80s. Yeah. And then it's like, apart from occasional goofy clothes, I actually forgot the story's not really important to be in the 80s.
No, it doesn't. No, it just fits in because. It's, I mean, it could have easily been post Justice League.
Yeah.
It's,
it could have been anywhere in history. It could have been Vietnam, and you'd have gone into the White House, and they could have been like, oh, the tensions are not with the Russians now. The tensions are with, you know, we just fucked up in Vietnam.
It wouldn't have mattered, would it?
No.
You know, it's, I don't know. But yeah, there's not like a single 80s song, as far as I recall, playing at any point, and that's a big mystery, because that you could have done something like, I don't know, let's just say girls just want to have fun.
Yeah.
Playing. I'll give you 180 songs to choose from, and guaranteed any of those songs would have given that scene a little bit of a lift.
Oh, West God, Studios.
Parachute pants? Yeah. Is everyone parachute now? No, fuck off. Go back to being dead. It's not working. It doesn't work.
Go back to being dead. I tell you, she did miss a trick though on Patty, because I think that this is probably the best sequel to Wishmaster I've seen since Wishmaster 2.
It is, that's it. And the story borrows so many elements. It is, it's Wishmaster. It's a lot of people have been drawing a lot of comparisons to a lot of other films. One big one is Batman Forever. You know, so the Riddler going in the big TV antenna machine at the end to change every, you know, warp everyone's minds. You know, Pedro Pascal does X-Men. You know, it's the ending of X-Men.
But how much logic do you have to stretch to be like, oh, I can get on every TV. Yeah, because you said they're directly beamed in or atoms or whatever. And it's like, really? Well, that's how they sold it to me. Okay, you've got fucking shitty 80s computers with perfect images of Pedro on. Like, oh my God. It's just, I know it's a comic book movie, but at some point, things have to matter. Internal logic somewhere. One or two things you can throw away or go, but when everything's like it, nothing matters.
Yeah. I guarantee if it had been set over here, Pedro Pascal's message to grant people's wishes all over the world wouldn't have hit somewhere like Mansfield, because they'd all been hitting in 84, they'd all been hitting the top of the tellies, jiggling the antenna at the back. It's not fucking working, Doris. Do you know what I mean? Oh, we miss that. Everyone else is out on the street, you know, just fucking wish that they've got like a fucking white lightning. You know, they've spent 16 special brew and a copy of Razzle. They're all out on the street laughing.
Meanwhile, there's a young Dan and Grant somewhere wishing for a bag of chips and a Dr. Pepper somewhere.
We wish for Nick's chips to be available at college. That's the thing, mate. I don't know, pal.
That's the big thing. The big thing for the story, which is paper thin to me, is, and well, there's two things. One, the wishes, just surely they'd like out logic each other anyway. Not everyone can get a wish. And also, if you think about it too much, like, oh, I wish I didn't have cancer. Reverse your fucking wish now.
Oh, exactly. Yeah. Yeah, that's the thing. It's the answer to the question isn't Wonder Woman beating the shit out of anyone. It's not some amazingly intelligent face-off, or, you know, isn't a massive superhero smackdown or anything like that. It's just basically one of them trying to convince people to not wish for the wishes. And it's kind of like you said, if there's someone who's actually wishing for something genuine, that's a non-selfish wish, which they would have been.
Yeah. Of course they would have been. Yeah. Like, what also is, like, all these people that
I wish my dog didn't just get run over.
Put him back under that bus. It's just, I just find it crazy that he's talking about connecting the entire world, which is, nowadays, you'd struggle to buy it in a film, never mind in the 80s.
Yeah.
And also, is auto-translate everywhere?
Mm.
Everybody speak English?
Yeah.
And the second point I wanted to say to you about the plot is, we've not even mentioned Barbara that much. Yeah, it shows how superfluous she completely is.
This is how it comes down to. She's right. Don't get me wrong. I like Christian Wiig. You know, I think she's great. On Saturday Night Live, I think she's fantastic. And she's been in a couple of comedies that aren't overly over the top comedies that I've liked her in. I like her when she's a bit more toned down. You know, she's.
I think me and you agree there. I think when she tries to be obviously funny, I think she's really unfunny. Like slapping in the face, like face palming Jean-Luc Picard kind of. Oh dear. And understated the better.
Well, and she's great when she plays Barbara before her wishes. She's great. It's nice to see different facets of her.
Yeah.
She plays it very bookish and not over the top geeky in a geeky way. She's just very inward and in herself. And then when she wishes to be like Diana, because she's impressed by Diana walking in heels, and it starts off quite innocently. You know, she's able to walk in heels. She's, her confidence starts coming through. You know, she gets hassled by that drunk in the park. She can't help herself. Diana sort of pushes him out of the way, and that's where it all starts off in. But then it's sort of out of nowhere. It's like, well, I'm going to protect my wish by becoming the villain. So I kind of get a little bit of a motivation that she doesn't want to, lose this confident person, likable person she's become. You know, it is important to a lot of people. But when she turns around and just out of nowhere goes, I want to be an apex predator. You know, she's already got Wonder Woman strength.
I always wanted to see an Altered Beast film.
See, I thought the clever thing, but I thought the payoff was that when Diana asked for Steve to come back and Barbara asked for to be like Diana, and Diana started becoming weak. Now, they justified it that bringing Steve back weakened, you know, her payoff was she lost her strength. It wasn't made obvious that her strength was going into Barbara. But they should have done it as a complete transition. That's, you know, it was like she should have become, I think Diana should have become mortal. But then you're running Spider-Man 2 territory. She loses her powers and her confidence. You directly against Spider-Man 2. Fuck me, that golden armor. You know, you get to a point and you're just thinking, right, so I've waited. The first 15 minutes, stuff happens. Then nothing happens for an hour and a half. There's still 45 minutes to go. You're thinking, right, so everything's got to happen in this last 45 minutes. Right, okay, so she's lost her strength. She's beat up a couple of trucks in the Middle East.
Yeah. She's got the saving of the kids playing football in the road. That we can obviously tell it's a dummy as well. It's
it's worse than it's more obvious than the dummy of Carrie Henn in Aliens. With the new, it's when it gets towards the end, and she's like, out of nowhere, you know. Barbara's saying she wants me to say express, and the next time we see her, she's literally, and they come for, you know, it's Cheetah from the comic books. Cheetah does look, you know, like that. But all I can think of is fucking Cats. Do you know what I mean? The worst film of last year.
Oh dear, I knew you were going
it's
there.
It's a strange choice. Why didn't they just have her? They could have kept her in the fur lined jacket. Cheetah print line jacket, or as 80s, you know, 80s style, kept in leopard print leggings. Yeah. I wouldn't have bothered me that. I wouldn't have been one of those fanboys who goes, oh no, she doesn't look like that. She's not turned into a mutated cheetah woman. God.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Some things just don't quite translate well. No, it was laughable. Really bad. Really bad.
You've essentially got Diana looking like Skeletor at the end of Masters of the Universe, looking tight, gold armor, and which again just makes me love Masters of the Universe even more.
Well, to be fair, I literally thought it looks like Skeletor from Masters of the Universe dressed as a male prostitute.
It's like someone sort of got like the helmet and everything. It's like a mix of the oversized helmets from the original Battlestar Galactica. And Battle of the Planets, the animated?
Yeah.
Yeah, the anime. And then someone just went, you know what? Fuck it, spray it gold. It's such a mess of a film. And to say that for 2.5 hours, literally, you know, the first 15 minutes and the last 45 minutes is where it all kicks off. What are they actually filling it with? I mean, I know I turned around to you and said, oh, have you watched it? And you were like, problem is, mate, so that I'll have to watch it again because I fell asleep. And you were really honest about it.
Yeah,
I was bored to tears. And you shouldn't be. It's not even entertaining in a take your brain out sort of way. It's not entertaining in an, oh, God, this is so bad, it's good. You know, it's just meh.
It's
such a fair film, and it's such a waste of money.
I think what also bothers me about the film is it's very, very, almost seems like Valley High School kind of, like, some of the bits I get, and I think if they lead up to something more substantial than it works well, but I think like the heels thing, you think okay, it's a little thing, but to where it's massive. But after a while, it becomes this jealousy type high school petty kind of thing between Barbara and Diana. And the thing that's really concerning about it is that like Wonder Woman's supposed to be this strong female empowered figure, but she kind of like is a mess without Steve.
Mm.
And then it's like catfights stuff.
Yeah. I think I might be getting mixed up here because I remember, you know, the end of the original Wonder Woman, it's bookended by a sequence that happens just after Batman versus Superman. You know, Bruce sends that picture of Steve and all the other, you know, Steve's unit and everything, really good to Germany with. And the idea is that Superman and Superman's sacrifice is what's supposed to give her hope. It's what gives Bruce his hope back. It's what makes them want to be better. You know, it makes it, you know, and they make a point of saying in Batman vs Superman that Wonder Woman's not been seen for a while. She's not, you know, she keeps it out of the limelight and everything. And they do play that off a little, you know, they try and people don't know who she is. You know, she's really quick to get in and get out and get the job done and everything. But she's so in the face of every action sequence that even a tiny little Kodak camera, the amount of time she just stares at people and stands and looks and glares at people, you could just get one of your little tiny automatic, you know, get your Polaroid out. Oh, well, that's who it is. It's Diana Prince. She works. Diana Prince. She works at the Museum of, you know, Smithsonian. But she's by the end of 84. She seems like a better person. She's had to let go of Steve again, but she feels like a better person. She saved the world. Everything's all right. It's almost like they sort of make a point of saying she now values herself. But where we see her in Batman versus Superman, she's not quite there yet. It's almost like they're trying to rewrite her arc. And then they said they've already said the green light in a third one.
Cannot wait.
Biggest belief. I know it was a big gamble for them because they released it in the cinemas at the same time as HBO Max. This was like the big, you know, they did sort of like try to do a Disney Plus thing where, you know, seeing what kind of money they can make off it. And it had been delayed quite a few times. I think with that amount of delay, you'd think someone at Warner's, some exec would have turned around and go, you know what? We can make this a bit better. We need to look, take this back to basics. You know, let's go back to the editing room, and it's 2.5 hours. Doesn't need to be that long, really doesn't. So let's chop away. Let's do this. Let's do that. Is there anything we've left on cutting room floor that can help save it? I don't understand where the decision was to release it. How it is. I mean, I'm not getting wrong. I'm not badgering it. I don't want it to sound like I'm just completely berating it, because it's not the worst film I've ever seen. I've seen a lot worse. But it's a very poor sequel to Wonder Woman. And Wonder Woman wasn't amazing, in my opinion. It was good, but it wasn't, you know, brilliant. But like, it just shows to me that DC don't know what they're doing.
They have no idea.
They're pumping stuff out. Warner's are constantly pumping stuff out without actually taking the time. And that's the love it or like, you know, love it or loathe it. The Marvel Cinematic Universe, they teased with Iron Man, they teased Samuel Jackson. If Iron Man didn't work out, that goes nowhere. It doesn't matter. Do Iron Man 2. You know, yes, it wasn't as well received, but it made a stupid amount of money because people are happy off Iron Man. Then you think, right, we'll do a little tease at the end of that. We'll do Agent Coulson going to Mexico. We'll tease Thor's hammer. We'll get people excited about it. We'll do Thor, and then, you know, we'll build up to the Avengers. And it was such a payoff because they took the time. Whereas Warner's always felt like they did Man of Steel and just went, you know what, we want Avengers money, we want Marvel money, so let's just throw everything at the wall.
Yeah, absolutely. What's the film that's took a lot of money for them? Joker. What's disconnected from the Snyderverse? Which I'm sure they've said a sequel possibly is in the works, and everyone's kind of gone, I hope they know what they're doing. So DC really just need to look at producing quality films, forget linking it into sequels and universes.
Well, it's shattered into the universe as it existed. What they call the Snyderverse, you know, the DC Extended Universe Batman vs Superman didn't really hit very well
because no one said Martha enough.
That's it. Yeah. Why are you saying that name? I just thought, you know, I'm getting the shit kicked out of me. So Martha, it's my Lois's safety words.
I was going to say that. Brilliant.
But then Justice League, which the movie you think should get to people, is, oh, it's like, you know, it's DC's Avengers. Let's That'd be interesting. And again, it just the whole behind the scenes thing. People were really aware of everything that went behind the scenes, all the shit that went off there, and it's not helping itself even more now with the further shit that's coming out about behind the scenes of Justice League.
Yeah, absolutely.
But the whole thing with the Snyder Cut, and fans, I don't know whether the Snyder Cut works or not, that just shows you the power of the fans that they weren't happy with the theatrical version. But Snyder's capping off that trilogy, and Wonder Woman was supposed to fit in with that. Aquaman, they went highly sort of action fantasy. It was, the colour palette was completely different. They moved away from that. Shazam was different. That's where all the splinters started. And now they've just turned around and went, whatever we do moving forward, it's its own thing.
Hmm.
They're basically doing their own sort of the multiverse type of thing. So, Joaquin Phoenix's Joker exists in the same universe unless they decide to tie it into something else. The Flash movie is supposed to reset the DCEU completely. Because, Affleck's coming back. He said he wouldn't, but then Rob Pattinson's got his own Batman film with Matt Reeves.
Yeah.
They're doing, and it's, you've got to think, it's great that you've got so many choices, but it shows, it kind of shows just how big their failing was, and that they're expecting you to go forward and go, yes, we've got a Flash film coming out with Ben Affleck as Batman, but we've also got, possibly, what would have been the same year if it not been the coronavirus? You've got the Batman with Robert Pattinson. Oh, well, who's Batman then? Well, it's whoever you want it to be. All right, I'll just go back and stick with Michael Keaton then.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, absolutely. I'll just, I'll get a bunch of mates around or on Zoom and we'll watch Batman.
It's a very odd. I don't know why they'd never got Bruce Timm, Baldini, who did the Batman animated series, and some of the standalone animated films are marginally better than anything they put out in the cinema for DC for the last 20 years. Notwithstanding, I'm a big fan of Man of Steel, so notwithstanding Man of Steel for me, just, animated series works so well, had a big following. Same with Justice League, animated series, and the Superman. So just, you've got people who write really good stuff. They know these characters incredibly well. Why not just let them? That, to me, that'd be like Favreau and Filoni taking over Star Wars.
Because, mate, it's power, I think. I think these studios don't realise that it's like you give a fan a chance. There's or somebody who's been there a long time, and it's almost like this kind of, we've either got to go with a name or we've got to go with what's trending or lately, or someone's done this or somebody's quite popular in these circles at the minute, let's hire them to write this. There's a risk to everything. Not everything's guaranteed to work anyway. Nobody has a track record 100%, but like you said, if something's going to be successful, then give it to somebody that's managed these people, these characters for a while, because if you do fail, or if you make a film that doesn't quite hit the heights, the fans will be a lot more forgiving and open because you're trying stuff like that rather than just producing crap that we don't think of. Like you said, can you imagine, we're fine, the majority of people who watch this video will be fine. But like you said, can you imagine the casual, or me telling my mum or dad, like, oh, I watch Batman. Oh, yeah, Robert Pattinson. I know my dad's not a particularly massive fan of him, so he might be like, oh, it's not for me. Oh, you need to watch The Flash then. It's Ben Affleck. Well, you just said Robert Pattinson or Batman.
Mm. Don't forget Michael Keaton as well, because Michael Keaton's
back. He's back. Yeah, exactly. So,
but doesn't that just show you that, because Into the Spider-Verse was successful. This is DC doing Into the Spider-Verse. There are multiple Batmans in it. The fact that they've gone back to get Keaton, they pursued Keaton to be in it, because the last time Batman, yes, we had the Dark Knight trilogy, which was immensely successful, but it wasn't sort of this high stylized, high fantasy comic booky. It was overly grounded for a superhero. It's not even a...
It was a crime drama slash superhero kind of vigilante film.
So last time Batman was a superhero, traditionally Myers, forget the Joel Schumacher messes, but was Keaton. So the fact that they're having to go back, you know, 35 years.
Yeah.
Just shows you where they are. It's just, and I think that's it. I just, it, coming away from Wonder Woman 84, the thing is, if you like these films, great, fantastic, brilliant. I'm glad people enjoy them. People enjoy them for what they were. You take what you want from them. But because they did Wonder Woman 84, you could quite happily, if you enjoyed Man of Steel, Batman vs Superman, Wonder Woman, Justice League as it is, and you don't enjoy Wonder Woman 84, you don't have to count it within canon of everything else, because the story doesn't go anywhere, it doesn't do anything, doesn't affect her overall arc at all. So you can sort of just push it to the sidelines if you want. It's just such a missed opportunity. I don't get it. It's like with the music, it felt uninspired, unoriginal. I would have filled it with 80s songs, you know, just for a start, heavily synth music. You know,
yeah, why couldn't the score have been synthed?
Yeah, it doesn't make it. You know, synth versions of... I'd have got Daft Punk to do it.
Yeah.
But then, as I said this to you before, that when she finally learns to fly, and they use the track from... I can't remember what it's called.
Adagio
in D minor or something like that from Sunshine, which is a beautiful piece of music. But it felt like Hans Zimmer just went, oh, I've got to write some more flying music. No, I thought, well, I'm just going to put that on, stick that on, it's fine.
Yeah, it's... How many YouTube compilations of different shows or great movie moments I've sat and watched with that in the background. It just took me completely out of the movie, feeling like I was watching a compilation or somebody's fan edit of the film.
Yeah, that's it. He should have just turned around and got his Going for Gold theme. Just played that. That would have fit with the Maxwell Lord.
Yeah, absolutely. One really big thing that bothered me, which I'm sure it would have bothered you, but I've not really seen much mention of it, is, you know, when Barbara, she gets to know this homeless guy, this black guy, that's, and she's really nice to him, brings him dinner.
Yeah.
We get the drunk guy who harasses her, and she's saved, and you get to see her the second time defend herself from this drunken guy.
Mm.
And she absolutely goes to town on him. She throws him into the side of a truck, which bends almost off of the truck, and he's still alive. And I was just like, it's almost at odds with it. Like, that was very cruel.
Mm.
And I know the guy's supposed to be a creep, but at the end of the day, he's actually just kind of said creepy stuff to her. He's not
punched,
he's grabbed her, but he's not done anything. And this is not a defense for characters like that, but like, she could easily kill him and snap him. It's like, does he deserve that? And the film kind of just goes like, yeah, well, you know what I mean? This is, yeah, fuck him, exactly. And I just found a lot of it really odd, like, you know, talking to you now, and, you know, like I said, I've had time to process it, because it has took me three attempts to watch. Fell asleep twice, and I mean, that's unforgivable.
Yeah.
You know, how many times I've put a film down at night, thought, well, if I fall asleep, I'll remember where I got to. This is the amount of times that I'm like, I'm wide awake, so I'm like, what a film that was, this was great. I should have gone, if I was tired, I should have gone, right, okay, I'm enjoying this or not, but I'm going to pause this film and I'm going to watch the rest of it tomorrow. I'm going to just watch the lot again. First night, I was a little tired. No excuse. I was like, this is, like you said, nothing happens, fell asleep. Last night, stoked up on coffee, watched it, fell asleep. And I was like, this really does not bode well. This is like Nightmare on Elm Street 2010 remake of something needed to happen.
Yeah.
And I think as I've had extra time to process this, it's just, it just feels like a drunk 12-year-old has written the film. It feels like at the beginning, when Diana's basically held back from winning, like, you can't do this. So she's gone, fine, well, I'm going to write this script where I do this and I do that. Like, she's taken over the screenwriting. Yeah. And that's how boys and girls interact. And that's how men are sexist to women down the street. I've never seen, God bless her, she's a nice looking woman. But especially as she's written in the film, I do not believe that she would be catcalled every time she walks down that fucking street. It's like, do you know what I mean? It feels like a slap in the face. Like, just as a, I know for some people they'll identify with that and stuff, and, you know, fair play. But I feel like Wonder Woman's a character that should appeal to men as well. And I think sometimes when you have characters like that as a male, I know there are horrible creatures out there, but I sat there thinking, I'm sure that, like, people just, like, don't just wake up and go, I'm going to say that to somebody. Like, some people may try it, but just randomly off the street and stuff, like, twice. Like, it's just, does this guy, is that his job? Is he just, just like catcalling for hire?
Well, that's it. Every company's got to have one.
Yeah, exactly.
It's every construction site has three. Yeah.
And I think the less said about the actual plot, it just feels very Saturday morning cartoon, and not in a good way. Like you've hit the nail on the head to me. We won't entrust, like, these people that have worked on the animated series of Batman that have shown some really good stories, but what we'll do is we'll get somebody to write something that maybe 90% of cartoons would have gone, fucking hell, you know, these wishes aren't making much sense.
No, that's it. I would rather, you know, I have more believability that in Skeletor's plans to attack Castle Grayskull, to try and take over Castle Grayskull every Saturday morning.
Yeah.
You know, I believe in him that he can do it. Every time he tells me what he's going to do, he might get all that.
Yeah.
I believe every time he says, I'm going to get this orb, or I'm going to do that, and anyone's going to go, oh, that's going to backfire again because it happens every week, I'm more likely to go, do you know what, he's going to do it this time than believe everything that went off in that.
Same as old Claw when he's like, I'll get you next time, Gadget. It's like, yes, I know you fucking will. Even though we're like, just a fucking arm in a chair, you twat. Where's your voice coming from?
But that's it. I think I'm happy to, I don't know about you, if there's anything else you've got to say on it, I'm happy to wrap it up because I feel like I've wasted enough of my life on Wonder Woman 84. I mean, I know we tend to, like, it might feel like we're cutting this short and I'm not doing it. I don't mean to do it. It's just the film that exhausted me.
Yeah, it did me.
And I feel like I don't.
It's very childlike, actually. Very in its plotting, and like, there could have been a good story, like you said. Like, if you get rid of Max, who is the best part of the film. And he still overacts in certain places because, you know what, why I don't blame Pascal. Why not, when everybody else is as dead as Steve is or should be? Is there anything you actually liked? Good night, everybody.
I liked it when the end credits started because I realised the nightmare was finally over. No, that's probably just been too harsh. I like Pedro Pascal. It's always good to see Chris Pine. I do like him. Beyond that, no.
I thought Gail was poor. I thought she was quite melodramatic. I think she sells her action stuff well. So, in places, I think Pedro Pascal is great. And the ending, even though it's schlocky and even though it's cheesy and even though at that point I don't believe that it would have happened, I did go, yeah, good lad, grab your son, even though he's just randomly appeared out of fucking nowhere.
I would rather watch Batman and Robin.
Yeah.
That's
actually, I think I would, because I think that you'd get more entertainment quality out of it.
Oh yeah, it's probably Singularity. I believed to a certain point Singularity the worst superhero film of all time. I think the DCU have probably done themselves the honour of surpassing. And people probably call me on that stuff like that, but I find Arnie's Mr. Freeze a lot more. It's probably one of his worst roles, you know, his career, you know, he's taken his career, but I find him more entertaining. I'd find the guy who was playing Bane Batman and Robin or entertaining, you know, into all the good, wearing that, you know.
He'd been a more credible villain.
I would rather watch 2.5 hours of a still image of Bane in that trench coat and that tiny little hat.
Yeah.
Than watching him in 84 again. Yeah.
I think you can. I think, what, 2.5 hours, I think, this film is, and I think I probably enjoyed myself for 10 minutes.
Yeah. And 5 minutes, so that is the end credits.
I think, you know, you're a little bit fucked when you're, like, lassoing lightning bolts.
Yeah, I don't know.
All throughout the film, I just got Harrison Ford's face going, that's not how the Force works.
I honestly thought Spider-Man had changed his costume up.
Yeah, that's what it was.
She uses that that's her main thing throughout the entire thing. Is she's swinging, you know, from building to building.
It's
she got more swing time in that than Tobey Maguire, Tom Holland, and Andrew Garfield. But
yeah, God. Every Spider-Man done, every Spider-Man game, everything put together. She don't even walk. I don't know why she's got legs. It's just mind-boggling. I just think the end game got a little bit of backlash. You know, for the female empowerment scene, it was too on the nose. It was too like eye rolling. You know, I understand stuff like that. I'm not a massive fan of politics and stuff in films, as people know, or certain agendas. Just if it comes naturally with the character, brilliant, put it in there. But when it's almost stands out to the audience, look at what we're doing, it takes me out of the film. That was more subtle than some moments in this film, and this film has not been called out for it, but yet Endgame got called out quite a lot by critics for it was too on the nose, takes you out of it. Why is this film not getting the same?
It's
getting a free pass, maybe because people are just asleep by that point.
Well, you know, I think the only thing they'll call out is that Gal Gadot is not playing, you know, she's not an Amazonian playing an Amazonian, because they don't want her as Cleopatra because she's not Greek, do they? She's not Egyptian, sorry. That shows how much I know about my history. But, you know, they turned around and said, oh, we don't want her playing that because she's not Egyptian. But it's like, you know, it's...
I can't wait for these people to realise what the term acting means. It'd be great when they start reading what that means, when they understand what acting means.
Well, she's Israeli, which, you know, is closer on that scale than what Elizabeth Taylor was when she played her. So
absolutely.
Yeah, I'm done. Wonder Woman 84. I didn't realize
the name of the film after how many times I fell asleep.
Rating it. Let's give it a rating before I.
It's an absolute steaming pile of shit biscuit.
Yes, for me, overall, because it doesn't progress any of the characters. Doesn't add anything to as a
it
sequel.
Regresses them.
It is my first soggy biscuit.
Yeah, this is the equivalent of having a chocolate obnob, dipping it in to the maximum point of it's a skill those biscuit guys get. Yeah. And you know exactly when to pull it out, and then you hear somebody shout your name, you turn around. You go, yeah, okay, you answer back and you turn around, and it's just as you pull it out, it dunks in and you think, you bastard. It is just a kick in the teeth. Yeah. So it is a fucking soggy biscuit that you have to get a spoon to get it out of. You can't even get it out with your fingers, and it doesn't even float to the fucking top of the cup.
There we go. Wonder Woman 84. The first geeky biscuit, soggy biscuit.
Dread.
Well done, everyone. Well done. I'll send them the award through the post. We'll send Gal Gadot and Patty Jenkins a soggy biscuit through the post.
And the last thing I'd like to say that is, I actually think there's a very lot of talented actors in it. I just think I feel sorry for them that we're saying this.
It's a shame. It's a massive missed opportunity, and it's, you know, that's what it is. It's, you know, but yeah. No, sorry. That's how we started the year. You know, we're back in lockdown and we had to watch that. So it's...
Things can only get better.
They have to. They have to. Right, well, thank you very much, buddy.
Thank you.
Love to speak to you and see you again.
Yeah, it's been great to see your face, mate. Not about the actual film, but
It's only worthwhile thing watching it for is that we can sit and do this again.
Yeah,
but if you liked or hated what we've done or what we've said, you don't agree with anything, or you love what we've done, let us know in the comments. Give us a like, subscribe, please. It really will help out. We're looking forward to, we've got plenty of things lined up. We're shaking things up a little bit. We're just going to try and do a few more newer movies. We're not just going to rely on stuff we've already seen and stuff like that. So it's going to be a bit interesting.
Ever heard of a film called Calamity Jane? Well, that's how up to date we are.
I like Calamity Jane.
So do I.
Great to see you, pal. And, I'll bid you adieu.
Yes, same time, same place, same year, same lockdown.
You take care, mate.
You too, buddy. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.